Continuing chapter Aleph, Posuk Lamed Zayin. Now up to Posuk Lamed Vov. It's all part of the description of the Chet HaMeraglim. As a matter of fact, if you would have to tell me exactly the description of the Chet HaMeraglim in Parshas Dvorim, where it ends, you probably would have to say that it's somewhere at the end of chapter Aleph, chapter Mem Vov, but Teishu Bekodesh Yomim Rabim, it's all about the sin of the Meraglim. So it's very, very surprising what Posuk Lamed Zayin is doing here, right in the middle of the Chet HaMeraglim. Right after it tells you, and it was decreed that all the Jews, the whole generation, should die out. They won't come to Eretz Israel, the generation of the Chet HaMeraglim. Except for Posuk Lamed Vov, Zulosi Kolev Ben Yefune. Who, Yireno? Kolev Ben Yefune is going to see the land. Nobody else of this generation. V'lo yeten es Eretz Israel Rabor Uvonov. Ya'an asher milei acharei Hashem. Because he listened to God. And in Posuk Lamed Zayin, Gambi hisanaf Hashem. What about me, Moshe Rabbeinu alone? God also showed his anger towards me. Biglalchem, because of you, he got angry at me. Leimor saying, Gam ato loy sovoishom. You will also not come there. So, from this connection between Posuk Lamed Zayin and the rest of the Parsha, what conclusion must you come to? If I were to ask you, why was it decreed that Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't come into Eretz Israel? You would have to answer me. Because of the Chet HaMeraglim. Right? And there is a double problem here. Number one, the Chet HaMeraglim, what does it have to do with Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, the Chet HaMeraglim is a Chet of the 10 Meraglim. It's a Chet of the other Jews who accepted the report of the Meraglim. Can't blame Moshe Rabbeinu for that. He wasn't part of those Jews who accepted the report of the Meraglim. So what does it mean? Gambi sanav Hashem biglalchem. This is the first question. The second question, as the Ramban, it's even a greater question, because we know that when was it decreed that Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't come into Eretz Israel? By the Mei Merivo. So, when does, you know, let's talk chronologically. When does the Mei Merivo happen? The last year, the 40th year of their journey through the desert, right? When does the Maaseh Meraglim happen? At the beginning of the journey through the desert. So there is a long, long period of time in between. So if it says in Parshas Chukas that the decision was made that Moshe Rabbeinu can't come into Eretz Israel because of the Mei Merivo, because of the story with the rock, so what is this posuk doing here? This is what the Ramban asks. And the Ramban gives a difficult answer. The Ramban gives the following answer. The Ramban says that the way to read the Parsha is the following. Your ancestors, your parents, it was decreed that they shouldn't come into Eretz Israel because of the hate of the Meraglim. And I share the same destiny with your parents. Of course, for another sin. But we share the same destiny. This is the way you should read the posuk, says the Ramban. Gam bi yisanaf Hashem biglalchem leimor. The same destiny that your parents were decreed to go through, not coming into Israel, also me. But of course, at another occasion, 40 years later. Which is very, very strange. Because the simple interpretation of the whole parsha seems to connect the Maaseh, the Chet HaMeraglim, with the decision about Moshe Rabbeinu.
Perhaps he's saying you still haven't learned your lesson. Perhaps he's trying to say after 40 years you still
haven't learned. Alright, could be. So I'm just telling you how the Ramban learns, and the Or HaChaim says that the Ein Dvorov Nirim, he says, I can't understand it. Ki ro'ani, I see, I'm quoting from the Or HaChaim, she'adayin hu medaber b'inyan HaMeraglim, goes through the portion. And he's saying just the words. You call it Ben Yefune, he followed God's advice, so he's coming into Eretz Israel. But God got angry at me because of you, so I can't come into Eretz Israel. What does it sound like? The same reason why your parents can't come into Eretz Israel, this is why God got angry at me too. This is the simple interpretation of the pasuk. But if this is the interpretation of the pasuk, so the questions come back. So why does it say in Parshas Chukas that the decision was based on the main meriva, the story of the rock? Yeah.
The main meriva wasn't the Baal Ham.
Ben Meberivo? Well, you mean that the word Biglalchem is difficult if it's talking about the Meberivo?
Yeah.
Well, not really, because what it means is Biglalchem, because of what I didn't do to you, I should have given opportunity to you to see me speaking to the rock. So the Or HaChaim gives us an insight into reconciling both psukim, and that they are both right. Well, not, you know, just reconciling the psukim, the posuk in Parshas Chukas, which says that Moshe Rabbeinu, it was decreed that he shouldn't come into Eretz Yisrael because of Mei Meribo, and the posuk here, which says that the reason why he's not allowed to go in because of the Chet HaMeragli.
You did the Or HaChaim,
right? Or HaChaim, 1700s. So the Or HaChaim gives us the following insight. We always think that the chait of Mei Meribo, the chait of Mei Meribo, Moshe Rabbeinu committed a sin, and his punishment was, he can't come into Eretz Yisrael. That's wrong. It's not a punishment. It's not a punishment, it's a consequence. And there is a tremendous difference between consequence and punishment. Because when you talk about punishment, there is a certain sense of justice. It doesn't fit. Consequences. I mean, you can throw a little stone and kill someone. Right? You can throw a stone and break a window. You have to pay for it. Those are the consequences. It's not the punishment. It's a consequence. The point is that it's not a punishment for Moshe Rabbeinu that he can't come into Eretz Israel because he didn't speak to the rock. That's not the idea at all. The idea is that that Moshe Rabbeinu can't come into Eretz Israel because if he can't come, if he can't lead the Jews into Eretz Israel, he can't come into Eretz Israel. And if the Jews don't merit to be led by Moshe Rabbeinu, then Moshe Rabbeinu can't lead the Jews into Eretz Israel. So the whole point is, can Moshe Rabbeinu lead the Jews into Eretz Israel? Can the Jews be considered disciples of Moshe Rabbeinu, followers of Moshe Rabbeinu? Or did they lose the status of followers of Moshe Rabbeinu? If they lost the status, then they can't follow Moshe into Eretz Yisrael, so Moshe can't lead them. They must be led by someone else who is closer to their level, more down to earth, so to speak. So in reality then, the real reason why Moshe Rabbeinu can't come into Eretz Yisrael, it has to be Yoshua Bin Nun and not Moshe Rabbeinu, is because of that gap that we spoke about so often, that developed between Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader, and the led, the Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people. When the gap between the two widens to the point that the Jews are not considered followers of Moshe, at that point, Moshe can't be our leader into Eretz Yisrael. Now, the question is, that state, that gap, when was it established with finality? Now, we know when it starts. It starts all the way back already. We mentioned already why Moshe Rabbeinu starts. He introduces the Chet HaMeraglim with the story of Yisro. Remember what we said, why he introduces the Chet HaMeraglim with the story of Yisro? Because in the story of Yisro, you already have the seeds of the Chet HaMeraglim. In what way? Because by the Jews saying, what a good idea Yisro had. You know, we really need a judicial system. This is in a way, a rejection of Moshe Rabbeinu. We are not looking for truth, we are looking to win. Remember what we said? Therefore, it's already a rejection. It's a small rejection, it's only the seeds. But eventually, when is it established with finality? First of all, it leads to the rejection of the man in Parshas Baloishcho, and right after Parshas Baloishcho comes Parshas Shlach, the Meraglim. And the Meraglim is the final situation which establishes the gap. The Jews say, we are not anxious to go in right now, because if we go in right now, Moshe Rabbeinu would lead us into Eretz Yisrael. We don't want to go into with Moshe Rabbeinu. It's too much of an effort to maintain the spiritual level to follow Moshe Rabbeinu. We would much rather go in a natural way with a leader which should be closer to us, namely Yoshua Bin Nun. So that gap is established by the Meraglim. That is when it's established with finality. Except that after the whole generation dies out, and the new generation comes into the world, Hashem gives them a final chance in order to rectify the gap, to close the gap. And that situation is the main meribah. Remember, we spoke about what Rashi means, and Rashi even says it clearly. What difference would it have made had he spoken to the rock as opposed to hitting the rock? It's not the miracle involved in speaking to the rock, which is a superior miracle to hitting the rock. We said, like the Ramban says on Rashi, is there a difference as far as the quality of the miracle is concerned? Take a gigantic rock, tap it, and get water going, right? You can't do it. You need a miracle for that. So is there a difference as far as the miracle is concerned between tapping a rock and getting water or speaking to the rock and getting water? So it's not the miracle that makes a difference. It's the lesson involved in speaking to the rock. I told you that the Yesod HaDvarim, that the basis for the whole idea is that Moshe represents the power of the Dvar Hashem. The Dvar Hashem, he doesn't work with physical means. Even against Amalek, he doesn't go down to the battlefield and fight. He stands up there using his word. It's Yoshua who uses the sword. So if Moshe Rabbeinu leads the Jews into Eretz Yisrael, I showed you the Rashi what it says. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have led the Jews into Eretz Yisrael, it would have been a victory without arms, says Rashi, without clay Zion, without arms, because Moshe Rabbeinu's battles are won without the power of arms. Okay? So this is the power of the word. Had they listened to Moshe Rabbeinu speak to the rock, the idea would have been absorbed by them. The Dvar Hashem, his supremacy. As it was, Moshe hit the rock, and the lesson wasn't given over. Therefore, the Jews didn't have a chance for the big turnover, for the big revolution, which will make them again Talmidei Moshe Rabbeinu. So they lost the last chance. True, Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake. He thought that it's better not to give them the test, because they may fail. Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that they were going to fail, and therefore he didn't give them the test. As a matter of fact, there are Meforshim who say that it was an intentional decision. Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly what he was doing by not giving the Jews a chance to change around and decide, yes, let's come into Eretz Yisrael with Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was worried about the future generations in Eretz Yisrael. Because in reality, I know it will sound very, very cynical, but in reality, somebody can say with cynicism, you know, we are lucky that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't bring us into Eretz Yisrael. And there is a lot to it. We are lucky that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't bring us into Eretz Yisrael. Because what would have happened if Moshe Rabbeinu would have led us into Eretz Yisrael? It would have demanded an enormous effort to maintain the level. Remember, if Moshe Rabbeinu leads us into Eretz Yisrael, they build a Beis Hamikdash, which is the final Beis Hamikdash. There is no exile, right? So, who can survive in such a level? Someone who makes an enormous effort to maintain that level. What would have happened to the mediocre Jews, to the average Jews? They wouldn't be able to survive. And Moshe Rabbeinu, we see already from the beginning, has such a tendency to defend the little guy in front of Hashem, the Erev Rav, right? When Hashem gives him the chance to create an elite, will create a new nation that you are going to lead. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I would rather have the mediocre Jews. Right? So in a way, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have given the test, would have spoken to the rock, and the Jews would have been impressed by the speaking to the rock, and they would have decided, yes, they do want to enter Eretz Yisrael with Moshe Rabbeinu, it would have been good, but bad at the same time. It would have required an enormous effort to maintain that level. So in a way, like the Gemara says, the incredible Gemara in Avodah Zarah that I mentioned already, why the Jews allowed the building of the golden calf. Remember the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Dalet, that the Gemara says that the reason why the Jews went along with the building of the golden calf is because they wanted to give the future generations the capacity to survive the corruption of Avodah Zarah. It was an intentional act to allow future generations to survive Avodah Zarah. They are strong enough that they can survive it. Future generations aren't strong enough that they can survive it. So by becoming immune and by maintaining the immunity and transferring it to future generations, they allow future generations to survive. Yeah.
Just as we learn that a generation is known by the ethics and morals and koach of the Kohen Hagadol, can't we say that maybe Lahavdil, Moshe wasn't on such a high level himself, and that's why we weren't allowed to go into the world? Why? Why must we say that the whole, maybe he wasn't on a high level. Maybe Yeshua ben Nun was someone that was on a high level. Because we know that Moshe is constantly challenging Hashem, and he's there from the very beginning.
Right.
Maybe Yeshua ben Nun was on another level. Well,
right. In a way, you know, that it says, you know what happens in the Chumash, between the story of the rejection of the man, which is a rejection of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the story of the Meraglim. Do you know another story which happens right in the middle there? Miriam. Miriam speaking against Moshe Rabbeinu. Right in the middle. And she says, what's the matter with Moshe Rabbeinu? Why can't he have normal marital relations? How does it fit in? You know, all of a sudden when everybody's complaining about Moshe, she also complains about Moshe. What's really going on? So it says that what she wanted to bring out is this idea. Why can't Moshe Rabbeinu be more human, come down to our level? Because when a gap develops between a leader and the led, right, if that's the problem, so fine, if you can't bring the Jews up to Moshe Rabbeinu's level, why can't we bring Moshe Rabbeinu down to their level, right? So they say, this is what Miriam was saying. Why can't he, we are also prophets, why can't he come down to our level and have normal physical life? So Hashem answers them, it's impossible. Moshe Rabbeinu is up there. Either you come up to his level, or you need another leader. So you see clearly that it's not the flow of Moshe Rabbeinu. In a way it is, because he's not able to bring the Jews up to his level. But it's never expected that Moshe Rabbeinu should come down to their level. He has to remain up there. So now, once we have this insight...
What is it? Does it say that the Jews made the golden calf, did it for that purpose, or does it allow it?
The Gemara only says like this, loy hoyu ru'uyi, meaning that normally they would have never done it. Except for the idea of survival in the future. This is what the loy hoyu ru'uyim loy sochet, which means if at their level they were in, they would have never done it. This is what the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says. Now we can understand the answer to the question. Is it true that Moshe Rabbeinu, it was decided that he can't come to Eretz Israel after the Chet HaMeraglim? 100% true. Could it have been changed? Sure. When was it finalized, the decision? By the Mei Meribah. So both statements are correct. Originally, the decision, the gap was established by the Chet HaMeraglim. But they had a chance to rectify it. Had he spoken to the rock by the Chet of Mei Meribah, he didn't do it. So the original decision is maintained. So therefore, both psukim, both verses are correct, says the Or HaChaim, okay? And therefore, there's no contradiction at all. Now, let's skip a little bit. Now, if we have the time at the end of the shiur, we'll talk about the journey through Seir Amon Emoyo. But there's something else that I want to talk about. So let's skip here. Chapter 3, Gimel. Vanefen vanal derech haboshon, vayetzei oig melech haboshon likroseinu. And oig melech haboshon came out in front of us, hu vechol amoy la milchomo. Right? And in Posuk Bey, vayoymer Hashem elai, al tiro oisoi, don't fear oig melech haboshon. Now, says Rashi, Al tiro oisoi, don't fear him. What's the implication if you say to someone, don't fear him? That you're afraid of him. Otherwise, why do you say, don't fear him? So Rashi says, Ubesichoin loy hutzrach loy mer al tiro oisoi. You see that by Sichoin, it doesn't say that Hashem said to Moshe, don't fear Sichoin. Why is it that he tells Moshe, don't fear Oig? And he doesn't tell him, don't fear Sichoin. Obviously, he was afraid of Oig and he wasn't afraid of Sichoin. That requires an explanation. Why is he afraid of Oig and he's not afraid of Sichoin? Elo misyare hoyo Moshe, sheloitamod loizechus, sheshimesh la Avrom. He did a service to Avrom Avinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of the merit of that service. What is the service that he did to Avrom Avinu, says Rashi? Vayovoi hapoli. And the polit, the escapee came, remember after the war of the five kings and the four kings, one person escaped, vayovoi hapolit, the escaped one, we might call him the survivor, because you know when it says hapolit, doesn't say polit, you hear the difference between vayovoi polit or vayovoi hapolit, what is the difference? The particular one, the, or you might say the famous survivor. We'll see right away why it's called Hapolit, the famous survivor. Hapolit, not a regal polit. And who is that according to our tradition? Oy Melech HaBoshon. So Moshe Rabbeinu is afraid that since he served Avraham Avinu, so such a person, it will be very difficult to defeat. And he's afraid.
What service did he do?
He came and told them that there was a war, and lo, the nephew of Avraham Avinu was taken prisoner. Tremendous service. And because of that, the Jews may lose the war. Hard to believe. Hard to believe. Requires an explanation. Yeah? Oh, besides the point, it wasn't such a meritorious act at all. Because the Gemara says that what he had in mind, that he, did he care that much for Lot? Not at all. He had a whole plan. He wanted Avraham Avinu to go fight the kings. Obviously, Avraham is going to die. He never had a minimal doubt that Avraham, if he goes to war against the kings, he will die. And if he dies, he will be able to marry Sarah. And that was his motive. So if so, you take away the whole merit of the service that he did to Avraham Avinu. Because his intention was definitely evil. Here? So how can you, what can you say? What about if something good comes out of an act that you do with evil intent? Do you deserve any merit? Well, we know that it's not that way. If you, for instance, you know, the example, you go and beat up somebody and he ends up in the hospital. Right? And then while he's in the hospital, he's a roommate, right? He's a man with a big business and he gives him a job. And he sets him up in business and he has a wonderful life, all because I beat him up and he ended up in the hospital. So then I come to him 30 years later, to this multimillionaire, and I say, you see, you know why you're a multimillionaire? Because I beat you up and sent you to the hospital. So do I get credit for it? Ridiculous, of course not. Because my intention was evil. I can't get credit for an evil act. So it's very strange that old Melech HaBoshon would get credit for something that he did with a purely evil intent, according to Chazal. Very, very difficult on this. Alright, so that's part of the question. Part of the question. Then let me tell you over a few statements in the Yalkut Shimoni, in the Medrash, right here on the spot. All have great difficulties. And as we add up the difficulties, it will clarify the whole issue. It says like this. Story number one. Oid Melech HaBoshon was a survivor from a long time ago. Remember, we called him the survivor. According to the Medrash, Oig Melech HaBoshon survived Miyeser HaRefoim, which means from the people before the Mabul. The people before the Mabul were all wiped out except Oig Melech HaBoshon. According to the Medrash, he was saved by holding on to Noah's Ark from the outside. Did you ever hear this Medrash? Strange Medrash. That he held on to the table from the outside, and that's how he was saved. What does it mean? We have to understand the meaning behind the statement.
It reminds us of two other stories.
What?
It reminds us of two other stories. Yaakov and Esav. One holding on to the other. Esav, and the other story, we just talked about the survivor.
The
Rahim. Caleb is the only one who's allowed to enter Israel. There's some parallel in the story.
All right.
Yeah.
What
were you
saying?
Were all the
people before the flood called
Rephoim? No. Rephoim were special people. Rephoim were special giants. But he survived. It's one story that requires an explanation that he survived by holding on to the table from the outside. Story number two. When Avraham Avinu made a big party, for Yitzchak, it says, Avraham Avinu made a gigantic party and invited all the important people of his generation. And Og Melech HaBoshon came to the party. And people started speaking to Og Melech HaBoshon saying, you see, you were wrong, Og Melech HaBoshon. You kept saying that Avraham Avinu is a mule, Tredo, a mule. And the nature of a mule is that it can't have any descendants. Predo. The word in Hebrew is predo. Predo, eino moilido. A mule can't, what is that? As a mule is a combination of a donkey and a horse. So it can't have descendants. It can't propagate. So, and you kept saying that Avraham is a mule. You see, he's not a mule. He is a child. Strange. Why should Og Melech HaBoshon say that Avraham Avinu is a predo. I'm stressing the Hebrew word for mule. Predo. What's the idea? Alright, what's the idea of calling him a mule? Strange. Another midrash. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to Boshon, to this area where Oig Melech HaBoshon was king, Oig Melech HaBoshon was sitting over the wall of the city, and his legs were hanging down. These are the words of the midrash. And when Moshe Rabbeinu saw his raglaim, he decided he has to kill him. But he was very afraid because he saw his raglaim. What's there? What's the idea behind it? Right. So, it says in the Mefarshim the following. Take a look here in Pasuk number Yudalef. A Pasuk that we don't understand on the surface, its relevance. Why does the Torah have to tell me all of the details about how great, how strong Oig Melech HaBoshon was? Kirak Oig Melech HaBoshon Nishar Miyeser Horefoim. Because I want you to know, says Moshe Rabbeinu, Oig Melech HaBoshon is the only one left from the Refoim. Says Rashi, who is the Refoim? Well, Shehorgu Amrofel V'Chaveroish Bashtores Karnaim. It means those very strong people there. It's called the Refoim, they were called. Chazal say that Miyeser HaRefoim is, he was left from the ones who lived before the Mabel, and they were called the Refoim. Hinei Arso, you want to see his crib? Who cares about his crib? No, it's very important. His crib is Eres Barzel, it's made out of iron, it's not made out of wood. Big deal. Yeah. And he, Berabas B'nei Amoin, and you know it's gigantic, Pesha Amois Orko. His crib was 9 amois, the length, Arba Amois Rochbo. What? So he was a giant. So therefore what? What is the Torah bringing out here? Let me tell you a little bit about what we can reconstruct about Oig Melech HaBoshon, what Oig Melech HaBoshon represents. You know that according to our tradition, the flood wasn't just a matter of the wiping out of 99.9% of the population of the world and the survival of some of the people. It was much more than that. It was a change in the whole nature of the people. People all of a sudden became weaker. People before the Mabel were much, much stronger. As a matter of fact, the Malbim says that people were almost invulnerable to sicknesses before the Mabel. As a matter of fact, before the Mabel, a human being is called Ben Odom. After the Mabel, they are called Bnei Noyah. And there is an importance to that. Because we don't find the concept of a collective organization before the Mabel. Before the Mabel, man is so powerful physically that he can survive all alone. He's independent. He's basically independent. The human being before the Mabel is an independent human being. He can survive alone. He's extremely strong. He's powerful. He's resistant. But that was his downfall. He was so powerful that after a while he saw himself as a god himself. And then he didn't feel any subservience to God. So he started sinning and he became corrupt. And that's what brought about the necessity for the Mabel. So after the Mabel, the whole structure, the whole system was changed. And the human being becomes weaker and more dependent on other human beings. This is why it's the table. It's the group which survives. No individual survives. It's not Noyach alone. It's not Noyach wives alone. It's the group which survives. So the first time we have the concept of a nation is after Noyach. Before Noyach, we don't see in the Torah the concept of a nation. It doesn't exist. Man is too self-sufficient. He doesn't need the organization which makes up a nation. He's self-sufficient. Okay? We say that, yeah?
After Noah, we need the organization.
Just the opposite. Before Noah, we didn't. After Noah, we become B'nai Noah. We organize in a group. And if you take a look in the Chumash, in Parshas Noah, Lil Shoinoi, Lil Shoinom, each one organized themselves according to their culture, according to their nation. The nations were created. Before Noah, there is no such a concept. The concept is the human being is almost completely self-sufficient. Now, Oig Melech HaBosher, either literally, if we take the Chazal literally, that he survives by attaching himself to the Tevas Noyah, or that the Medrash means it metaphorically, that outside of the Tevas Noyah, there is someone who was born after Noyah who has the characteristics of those people before Noyah. It's irrelevant whether the Chazal mean it literally or not literally. The fact is that Oig Melech HaBoshon is a specimen which belongs before Noyah. This is for sure. This is what Chazal are trying to tell you. So Oig Melech HaBoshon is actually a superhuman being. He still belongs to those people before the Mabul. So he develops what? A what? Wait. So he develops a certain attitude himself. He lives in a world of weaklings compared to him. They are nobodies compared to him. So he decides that he belongs to a master race. A race, a chosen race of supermen, physically speaking. And he believes that he is the chosen person. Look around at everybody else. They are nobodies. He has only one antagonist, but not in the physical area. Somebody who is spiritually his equal. What he is in the physical world, there is a superman spiritually. Do you know who is his antagonist? Avraham Avinu. So in his mind, an antagonism develops. Obviously, Hashem is going to choose a chosen people. Is it going to be a spiritual chosen people, or is it going to be a race of physical supermen? So he decides that he has to destroy Avraham Avinu, and he has to become the father of this master race that will control the world. He sees in that sixth sense of his that sorrow will be the carrier of the genes of that super race. He sees it. But he says to himself, Avraham Avinu can't survive. Because this physical world is physical. And Avraham Avinu is spiritual. How can the spiritual and the physical come together to create a super race? They just don't mix. It's separated. What's the word separation in Hebrew? Pirud. Pirud. What's the word for the mule? Preido. You can't put together the spiritual and the physical. Those are two worlds. Avraham can't have a continuity. This is why he kept saying he's like a mule. He can't have a procreation. He can't procreate. He's a unique case. I can procreate. I can be a master race within the world. Not Avraham Avinu. Okay? So according to this comes out that Oig Melech HaBoshon kept that in mind. That he represents the antagonist to the descendants of Avraham Avinu. And when he reacts to what people were telling him, you said he's a mule. He keeps saying, don't worry, eventually I'll show him that I'll destroy them all. So in his mind, that antagonism eventually will come face to face and one will destroy the other. That's what Oig Melech HaBoshon has in mind. Now, yes? Yeah? Well, that's I'm saying that the Chazal say that he survived the flood. We don't know if it means literally or that genetically he survived the flood, which means that Oig Melech HaBoshon was one of the descendants of Noah, but he belonged, as far as his type is concerned, his nature is concerned, to the people before Noah. It's an irrelevant point, I mean, whether it's literal or not. The point is he belongs to the people before the Mabul. Yeah, let me just conclude because we won't have the time. So the point is like this. When Moshe Rabbeinu sees Oig Melech HaBoshon, or he finds out about Oig Melech HaBoshon, what he is afraid of is this encounter that since this world is a world of zelum mazeh, is a world of balance, he thinks, Moshe Rabbeinu, that in this world there has to be an antagonism between the super race spiritually and the super race physically. So he thinks that Oig Melech HaBoshon is by his very nature hapolit. What does the word hapolit mean? The survivor. He'll survive anything. And if he will survive anything, how can we lead against them a physical fight? Perhaps in the physical world, which is the level of the Jews right now, Oig Melech HaBoshen will show his superiority. Do you hear the problem? This is what crosses Moshe Rabbeinu's mind. So he's not talking about the merit of Avraham Avinu. When it says that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid because Oig Melech HaBoshen wanted to kill Avraham Avinu and marry Sarah, what is Moshe Rabbeinu afraid? About the fact that Oig Melech HaBoshen represents the counterbalance to the Jewish people. As long as we are spiritual and he is physical, so our survival is guaranteed. But the Jews have just gone down from the spiritual level to a physical level, to the point that Moshe can't lead them into Eretz Israel. Just perhaps at this level, Oig Melech HaBoshen will be superior. So there is only one thing that can happen. The only one that can really defeat Oig Melech HaBoshen is not the Jews. The Jews are too physical to defeat this master race of physical strength. The only one who can really destroy Oig Melech HaBoshen has to be Moshe Rabbeinu himself. And this is why it says that Moshe Rabbeinu personally killed him. When he saw his regel. Now, regel is a symbol. Regel is a symbol of what attaches men to this earth. Right? That's what the regel is. Right? I'm attached to the earth through the regel. So when he saw the regel, which means when he saw his attachment to this world, he decided that that will represent a constant danger to the Jewish people. If the Jewish people would have remained in Moshe Rabbeinu's level, there would be no need for killing Oig Melech HaBoshen, because he can't compete with a spiritual super race. But the moment he ceased to be this spiritual super race, then Oig Melech HaBoshen becomes a threat. So therefore, Moshe has to get rid of it. Okay? Now, the reason why this Torah stresses the enormous physical characteristics of Oig Melech HaBoshen is to bring out this point. The point is that Oig Melech HaBoshen saw himself as the physical counterpart of the Jewish people. Okay? This is the whole idea of the antagonism between Moshe Rabbeinu and Oig Melech HaBoshen. Okay, good.